This is the Electric Vehicles Breakout Session. This panel hosts the best and brightest in unique and successful applications of electric vehicles in Wisconsin. Panelists will discuss solutions for barriers to adoption, short-term opportunities, and new mobility applications that may speed electrification in Wisconsin. The panel includes Becky Cooper of Bounce Milwaukee, Mike Cornell of Arch Electric EV, Mahanth Joishi of City of Madison, and the moderators are Jane McCurdy of Renew Wisconsin and Dan Steinhardt of Arch Electric EV.
There are currently 78,000 plus places to charge electric vehicles in America and 150,000-ish places to get petrol. So when people tell me this EV thing isn't happening, I mean, the people from 2010, okay, they were right. In 2010, it wasn't happening. But when they tell me it's not happening now, I tell them, go look at this stuff. Go look at that chart I just showed you. Another interesting piece of the landscape is that there are 12 models of cars. Of all of the cars, I mean, 30 manufacturers, everybody with, you know, up to 20 models in some cases. There are only 12 models of cars that make up 93% of the current EV population in America. Show of hands for a shot glass. Do I owe you a shot glass? I do, right? You said ice. For another shot glass, by show of hands, who knows who Tony Seba is? One guy. You're going to get me right after, right? So Tony Seba, do you want to tell us who Tony Seba is, or do you want me to? All right. If you have not taken the opportunity to watch Tony Seba's YouTube explanation of how the future is going to evolve in America and in the world, especially when it comes to energy and transportation, you really don't know what's going on. Am I right? So Tony Seba, when you go home tonight, Google it, watch it. Give yourself the time. Give yourself the whole hour to watch it, because it will tell you what the future is going to be. He predicted it. He predicted that ICE engines would be on their decline by 2020, 10 years ago. And guess what? ICE engines are on their decline in 2020. Market share. Everybody heard Ellen Nowak today say there's only 2,000 EVs in America, in Wisconsin. She was only off by about 6,000. So she's close. She just needs better researchers. But our market in Wisconsin is 0.5% of all the car population is now EV. I remember talking to a guy about the electric bike in 2010. And he was a huge, huge motorcycle dealer of all kinds. He was one of the biggest in the world. And he said he thinks the market for EV anything is probably going to be 1%, and then it'll peak. California is getting close to 10% right now. Volkswagen, I mean, again, you can watch all this stuff on the internet, but Volkswagen just announced, which is ironic, right, because of the Dieselgate, they just announced the largest investment in North America in EV production. And what they're not talking about, but we know this is going to happen. I think you know this, right, Jason? They're going to partner with Ford, and they're going to make all of Ford's EVs. So in Tennessee, the majority of the EVs made in America are going to be produced in by Volkswagen in a joint venture with Ford, with an anticipated production level of 20,000 cars a month. So compare that to Tesla right now at 5,000 cars a month, which 8 years ago wasn't even a car company. And you can see what the future is going to be like. So last comment I have is the EV market is just over 2% today in all over America. And now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Dan Steiner.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me today. I guess we went through the automotive industry, and I wanted to give a couple other industry news related articles out there. One of them being, what does the oil industry think? And I used to do a lot of work with the oil industry, and about 2 or 3 years ago, I started finding out that Shell was starting to become a pretty big player in trying to sell electric vehicle charging stations to their gas station owners. Today, we still don't really see a whole lot of that going on in Wisconsin, but the graph does show us that BP expects to see a huge dive into electric vehicles in the near future. I think about 300 million cars by 2040, which is pretty close, I think, to the numbers that we saw before. What do the utilities think? You know, we heard a little bit from Ellen from the PSC and some of our legislators. And basically, their fear, I think, is that if we produce so much solar from distributed sites, that, you know, where is all this electricity going to go? And if we can turn that electricity into clean cars and start turning our mileage over to that, I think they'll really see and be enlightened into kind of a clean energy future, that our energy can be harvested from clean energy sources as we're doing today, but we can also use it for transportation. And I think that should really kind of give us a lot of hope for the future, especially for us that are involved in the solar energy industry. And why I think Arch Electric looks at this as a big opportunity for us to help our customers go to an electric mode of transportation. So our partners in the utility spectrum, you know, for example, Alliant Energy, WPS, We Energies, have offered different rebates in the past. I think Alliant Energy has been the most productive. Last year they offered $500 for new electric vehicles, offered $250 for used electric vehicles, and then they offered another $250 to purchase a level 2 charger. That was 2018. We're still waiting for 2019, so if you see someone, is anybody from Alliant Energy here? I can't believe that. Part of me is wondering why the utilities aren't getting more involved in the electric vehicle adoption. And to me, this would be a great venue to be here and say, yeah, we're here to support you, and nobody's here. But anyway, so it's up to the private industry to kind of push this. And so that's kind of what we're out and trying to do. I think manufacturers are, they've got paperwork, they've got forms and things. They send them around their employees. They say, hey, if we put a few electric vehicle charging stations out there, would you guys use them? American Family has given that story in the past, and they put a few electric vehicle charging stations out there. And then the employee can adapt to those electric vehicles, spend a point of their day at the electric vehicle charging station, and charge their vehicle. And then it really came down to, especially for American Family Insurance, was like, well, when we put these charging stations out, we kind of just adopted to these standalone charging stations, basically offering free power. But if we're going to do this for future generations and more for more employees, we got to do something different here. So that's where we kind of started this list of questions. And this kind of helps guide what an employer or a manufacturer, industrial, commercial customer, it kind of guides them on what electrical vehicle charging infrastructure they should invest in. And so we go about it in these questions. Do you want to collect fees for charging and charge those fees over time? And based upon that answer, it'll kind of generally give me a feel for what type of charging station we need to recommend. Do you want to decide who can charge at your station? Do you want to see how your stations are doing at a glance? You know, that will basically allow you to build more infrastructure for the future. If you know your stations are at 80% utilization, and we need to probably budget next year for maybe a couple additional stations. Do you want to know who's using your stations? Maybe even give them like a benefit report of, you know, at the end of the year, basically, you know, as a benefit to you, the customer, we paid for maybe half of the time you spent at that charging station. Do you want to know how much energy you're using and set limits on energy use? You know, cut like a timeout every 2 hours, someone's got to switch and such. So really, based upon that, you basically have two different charging stations options. You have the connected charger or the standalone station. The connected charger is basically some type of charging station that can record energy usage, that actually has a pay system set up inside it. And one of those manufacturers here is ChargePoint. You kind of give an overview of the different charging stations that are available. And the simple one, of course, is your level 2. That's your 240-volt charger. Charges about 25 miles of range per hour. That's the RPH acronym that you see below there. When you get into commercial, fleets, you can start using things like the CPF-25. Again, level 2 charger, simple commercial design, made for exterior applications. Once you want to start selling your electricity, let's say you have that business and you're not cool with giving away free electricity, spend a lot of money on your own electricity, you're into seeing your employers start driving a sustainable mode of transportation, but you still want to make sure they're paying for it so it's even across the board. That gets you into your CT4000s, which is, again, a level 2 charger. You can scan a card, you can put in your cell phone or scan your cell phone, and you create an account, and it charges you and allows you to keep a balance on there so you can pay for that. In the city of Madison, for example, you guys have a few of the CPE200s, I believe, one of them being on East Washington, and those have come in really useful for me. I'm coming from Plymouth, Wisconsin, and I drive about that, 110 miles, wherever it is, and I'm not going to make it back home unless I hit one of these high-speed charging stations that they have. And wouldn't it be wonderful to have one like every 25 miles? That would really be great. But so ChargePoint does make one of these, and basically I go up to, I scan my cell phone, and I can get about 200 miles of range per hour out of that station, and basically 30 minutes later, I'm good to go. I could take off and get back home. And then you've got your non-connected chargers. More cost-effective to install, but in the future, what are you going to do with these stations? Some of them have some a key technology that, in order to charge, maybe you have to go pay someone and then you get a key and then you can unlock the charging station and plug it in. That's things I've seen in the past. You also have your Tesla charger. A lot of times Teslas can either be, your home charging station or it can be the supercharger. A lot of times when you buy your vehicle, you're getting some benefit there to free charging in some cases with the superchargers. And then here, this is what we're really excited about. About halfway through 2018, SolarEdge really started adopting the SolarEdge EV charger inverter. And so if you're familiar with solar, your DC gets converted to AC through the SolarEdge inverter. And then since we have 240 volt AC available, we can actually connect it to this electric vehicle charging cord and charge your vehicle. It's got an app so you can set times when you want to charge. You can tell it to charge off of solar only. It allows a lot of functionality for you to feel more independent off the grid and also make sure that your vehicle's charging from solar and not maybe from the utility. A slogan that Mike and I like to say is PV plus EV equals sustainable transportation. So photovoltaic plus electric vehicles is complete sustainability, which is pretty awesome. So we started doing those installations in the third and fourth quarter of 2018 and really look forward to doing quite a few more. They work for, I think, for residential and for some commercial installs as well. And that's the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan and Mike from Arch Electric EV. Next, we will have Mahant Joshi from the City of Madison. I'm glad to see the room filled up. Thanks for joining us. There are some seats in the front if you wanted to filter in. Oops.
Okay, thank you very much, Jane, and the rest of the panelists. A lot of good stuff here. Hopefully I'll be talking to all of you later on about some business we could possibly do together. So I'm Mahant Joshi. I'm with the City of Madison. I'm the Fleet Service Superintendent. Basically, my department's in charge of buying all of the city equipment you see out there, the fire trucks and police cars, garbage trucks, that any city needs to maintain city operations. And it's about 1,400 vehicles. That's not including the bus system and the water utility. It's about 1,700 total vehicles when you include those in the City of Madison. So we have a lot of purchasing power, obviously. And we also have a lot of power to change the mix of the fuel that we get. And we'll be talking about EVs and also other things today. So the photo that we're looking at here, it's only a block away, just about from where we're standing right now. These are Chevy Bolts. These are the first three electric cars that the City of Madison has bought. They're working fine. They're good cars, good pickup, less maintenance than other cars. There's a lot less moving parts on electric vehicles, which you might not know about. You don't have to change the oil ever because there's no oil to change. There's a lot less fluids, also some of which come from fossil fuels and pollute the environment further besides just the emissions. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. Okay, so why should we care about this? I might be preaching to the choir here. It's probably a group that cares about the environment and the air quality that we breathe in. However, I believe we have to take things to a more extreme level. We're actually on war footing. Anyone who denies it is watching bombs fall on our heads while we try to fight back, those of us that care about this. So this is an existential threat to all of us, all of humanity, everyone in the world, every country. It's not an American thing versus other countries. So this is just a small example. There's so many photos I could show you, but this is from the campfires recently. Worst forest fires in California history just this year. It's not a coincidence. It's because of the record high heat and dryness in that area. It's one of many tragedies we're seeing, and unfortunately, it's come to our doorstep here. We had record flooding in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm sure a number of you are here. Those of us who work for the city government, I see some engineering folks here, 24/7 for weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, which in the grand scheme isn't even that much. I was in New York City during Hurricane Sandy. It cost about $70 billion. That was my job for 6 months, distracting all of us in operations, for city operations, from something else that we should have been doing. So just this little event here cost several lives and over $300 million in damage just in Dane County. So there was a lot of flooding in other parts of Wisconsin that cost a lot more in damage than this. Okay, to the good news. There's a lot we can do. I mentioned the Chevy Bolt. It's almost a 240-mile range. This is more than enough for city employees to get to what we need to for local driving, whether that's inspections, meetings, site visits, the kind of stuff that all of us do. It's more than enough for that. We have one right at the city county building next door. It's a pool vehicle that any city employee can borrow and take out. In case you haven't, you should try it. Great car. I mentioned maintenance before. I mentioned less fluids that you have to replace. You don't have to change the brakes as often because they wear less due to regenerative braking, which is one of the features of hybrid cars and electric cars. Another thing is you're supporting the Midwestern economy. A lot of these are assembled in Michigan, and I know Jane's from Michigan, so shout out there to Detroit and the Michigan economy as well. And zero emissions. And finally, a lot of people talk about emissions, but there's other, what I like to call upstream effects. One of them is civil unrest around the world because of our dependence on fossil fuels. That includes the Middle East, where I lived when I was younger. The Middle East has active war zones. A lot of that is the U.S.'s fault. A lot of that is because of the fossil fuels that we're extracting from that area and protecting the air and sea lanes and the land from the Middle East to the United States to ship all of that fossil fuel here. So there's upstream effects besides just the emissions that we're experiencing here in Madison, and that's caused here in Madison higher than average asthma rates in the children and adults that live in Madison. A lot of that could be because of the transportation sector as well. So upstream effects, downstream effects, a lot of bad stuff. But there is good things going on. The federal government is unfortunately way behind on this issue, and we need a change in Washington for us to be able to, I think, move ahead in this area. But there's a lot that cities can do, the counties can do, states can do, and coalitions of all of the above. And that's one of the reasons I'm here, is to talk about what we can do on this. So there's something called the EV climate. Mayors, there's an RFI, request for information, from the electric vehicle industry. I'm proud to say Mayor Paul Soglin has signed on, and the city of Madison is a part of this. Over 400 city mayors have signed on to this plan, and we're expecting to buy about 25,000 electric cars through this climate mayors group, which I'm proud to be a part of. Okay, other things we can do. Biodiesel. Is anyone here familiar with what biodiesel is? Great to see some hands. Biodiesel is great. It's also locally sourced, so most of the biodiesel the U.S. uses comes from the Midwest, from things like soybean plants and agricultural waste. A lot of that comes from Wisconsin itself. And we also have refining capacity in the Madison area for biodiesel. It's something I think all fleets should be doing. We went up to 10% biodiesel this year as a blend. We're going to double it next year. Just this year, Madison saved about 1 million pounds of carbon dioxide. There's also a lot of other bad stuff we're preventing from being emitted thanks to biodiesel. There's no impact to the vehicles. The drivers don't even know it's in there. Just like this fire truck here, they're all running on biodiesel without a problem. Like I said, we're hoping to double our use of biodiesel next year. Part of the problem, or part of the reason this is part of the puzzle, is you don't have electric fire trucks yet. We would buy them if we had them, but it's going to take a while for them to develop those. And I hope they are, and we'd buy them. Down the road, we expect to see more electric trucking, electric pickup trucks that are better than they are right now, electric vans, box trucks, fire trucks, garbage trucks. But in the meanwhile, I think biodiesel is one of the bridges we can use towards that next 5 to 10 year window when you might start seeing better electric trucks, et cetera. Another piece of the puzzle is what's known as the hybrid cars, where you have things like the Ford Fusion that you see on the left there. We went from the Chevy Impalas, which detectives were driving, to putting detectives in the Ford Fusion hybrid. We went from 18 miles per gallon to 43 miles per gallon, just a $2,000 investment difference, which we're going to make up. These are cars that go multiple shifts. Generally, they're driving a lot to solve crime and whatever else they're doing. And now, for the first time, Ford has offered a new model of enforcement vehicle, or squad cars, as we call them, that will be hybrids as well, so gas-electric hybrids. So we're probably going to be doubling a lot of our fuel efficiency for a lot of operations that could have been hybrid before or electric before. So we're hoping to buy all our police cars as either electric or hybrid from now on. And I'm working with the city council to legislate this as well. And that should result in some small investments for now, which in the future will result in a lot less in maintenance as well as in fuel costs. If you half your fuel costs, as you know for yourselves, if you drive a car, if you cut your fuel consumption in half, there's obviously an economic benefit. You'll see it in the wallet. You'll see it in our tax funds as well. There's also something else called anti-idling technology. I actually broke my arm last year, unfortunately, on the road when I was riding my bike, and I was picked up by an ambulance, and I spent probably an hour and a half in the ambulance. The fire department's ambulances have to idle for what they do, and that's just a natural part of being an EMT or driving an ambulance. And this is something every fire department in the country is facing. There is technology to switch off the engine of the ambulance and run everything you need to in the back of the ambulance, the air conditioning and the medical equipment, et cetera. So for that hour and a half, it could have been on the electrical system in the back of the ambulance, or the box as we call it, while the engine shuts off. And so what you're doing is saving fuel, either gasoline or diesel. You're also saving the engine because engine wear is caused by idling. It's very damaging, and we have data on that to the vehicle. And you're also polluting the air for that period of time in that neighborhood, wherever it is. Similarly, you have what's known as bucket trucks. We have a picture here. This is something utilities use to get people up in buckets to do work on utility poles. Or the Parks Department has these for tree maintenance. We have staff, forestry staff, who go up in the buckets to maintain trees, prune them, that kind of thing. These arms are generally run on the diesel engine. So the diesel engine's connected to the arm, the bucket goes up, people do the work. It could take 4, 5, 6 hours, that entire time right now we're idling and polluting the air. There's also noise pollution with these. So anti-idling technology is a plug-in hybrid technology where you actually have an electrical system that shuts down the vehicle cab and engine automatically, and the person in the bucket can do everything they need with the electrical system without any emissions. So without noise, without engine wear, without bothering the neighborhood and emitting a ton. So we're seeing about 40% fuel savings on the ambulances. We'll be getting at least 3 of the bucket trucks that I mentioned in 2019. So we'll be moving forward there on anti-idling technology. The Dane County is doing great stuff. You might have seen Joe Parisi received an award from the county. And one of the great things they're doing is related to converting methane from the trash, all the trash that's in that landfill that they were talking about earlier, being converted to CNG, compressed natural gas. It's a renewable form of energy. It's a much cleaner burning fuel than diesel or even biodiesel. It's even better. And it's coming from a source where where you have the methane there in the landfill anyway, so we might as well be tapping into it. They mentioned they're going to be selling it to other parts of the country. I think City of Madison might as well take advantage. We're pretty close to it. So it's a partnership with the county that we're working on to buy some CNG vehicles. There are some challenges with CNG. You have to have your garages outfitted with fire suppression systems and natural gas detection systems, that kind of thing. We don't have that right now. However, there's a solution for that as well, which I'll tell you about in a second. We're putting GPS systems on a lot of our vehicles that don't have them. This is useful because it tells you how much vehicles are idling on your computer. I can look at all 600 vehicles that are on the system and see which ones have been idling. You can coach the drivers. If you need to, you can go into discipline down the road. You can also cut down on speeding, and that's good for multiple things. That's good for safety. We will get into less accidents if we're not speeding as much, hard braking, hard accelerating. Those kind of behaviors lead to accidents, and also you will save on fuel. All right, so we're building a brand new building. I don't know if you've heard, our main headquarters right now is being converted to the new public market. It's on North First Street. There's a garage over there. That's where I work. There's four different garages that we operate that will be consolidating into one out on Nakusa Trail. It's near the Walmart Supercenter out there. And this will be a cool project. It'll have solar heating. It'll have solar panels for electricity. It'll have electric charging stations built in for the cars that we're expecting to get. We're expecting to expand into at least 25 electric vehicles by next year, and I'm hoping much more. So this will be able to also fix CNG vehicles, as I mentioned before. We can't right now. We would have to go to a vendor and probably spend more to go to a vendor to fix our CNG. So this new building will take us forward on sustainability, and we're going for at least LEED Silver certification, and the engineering department is leading that great effort for us to build this new building. Okay, another aspect of this is we are working closely with local high schools and the local technical college, which is Madison Area Technical College, on educational initiatives around fleet, and we have good relationship with the high schools. We have a bunch of high school apprentices working with us. One of our goals is to bring them into education around electric vehicles. These 16, 17, 18-year-olds will be seeing these in the future, and we'll have to know how to fix electric cars and electric chargers and what they do and how they drive, that kind of thing. I mentioned again, maintenance is easier, but there's still some things to learn, and we're hoping to show high school kids, MATC kids, how to fix electric cars, what it's like to drive them, et cetera. So this is a good relationship we want to continue. Part of the reason I'm here, again, is outreach. We're working with a lot of other fleets in the area. The state has a large fleet. The university has a large fleet. The county has a large fleet. MG&E has a fleet, and we're also working with them on chargers. They funded some chargers for us and are giving us some expertise. I mentioned the educational institution. So there's a whole, what you might call, a renewable energy complex around what we're doing. And we all have to work together on it. None of these are the answer. EVs aren't the answer by themselves. Biodiesel, hybrid, anti-idling, working with other fleets. None of these are the answer on their own. We have to do all of the above to even have a chance, I think, to make a dent in the climate change problem. So that's why I'm glad a lot of you are here to hear what we're saying on this. And then finally, even though our federal government is woefully behind in this area, you're seeing great action from other places. The country of Denmark going all electric. India, China, which are much poorer than the United States, are going all electric with goals like by 2030, only electric vehicles will be sold. These countries have a much larger population than us, so it can make a huge difference. And then I mentioned my work with New York City before. New York City is up to 2,000 now electric vehicles. New York City obviously is still doing everything they need. Whatever operations they have to run are being run. There's no compromise on buying electric vehicles and what you're able to accomplish. And I think part of why New York's doing it and why we're doing it as well is as an example for the public. All of us here could be driving electric cars. They work great. They're very safe. They will cost you less on maintenance. We estimate the power to run a car like a Chevy Bolt for 10 years would be about a quarter of what you'd spend on gas. About a quarter is an estimate. And plus, without as much of the fluctuation you might see with the fossil fuel market, you could go back up to four bucks a gallon without us having any control over it. It's basically criminal cabals deciding that for us. Okay, in the future, and this is something I want to talk to Arch Energy about, I'm interested in getting solar-powered charging for our electric cars. I know it's a little bit expensive right now, but it would be a good demonstration for the public here about what you can accomplish. There's a Tesla truck there. We're a ways away from buying a Tesla truck, but I mentioned before, I'm hoping some electric trucks become available. I would jump on it. I would try to get money for it, et cetera. And then finally, you're getting into autonomous vehicles pretty soon. You might see your garbage picked up by autonomous trucks at some point in the future, but it's not going to be for a little while. So the things that we're working on right now are the bridge towards that future, which we're not at yet. But the technology is getting better every year. And I think government's role should be to help shape the market. As a customer, we don't develop this stuff ourselves. We depend on the private sector to develop what we're looking for. But if we go out there and ask for things, we can change the market. I know New York City certainly has. There's no reason we can't, along with California and some other places, be more progressive in this area. Thank you very much. Contact us over here.
All right. Thanks, Mahanth. Next up, we have Becky Cooper with Bounce Milwaukee. All right. Let's see how I can. Well, let's see. No? All right. There we go. I think this works. Perfect. I am Becky Cooper from Bounce Milwaukee. That's not actually working. Hey, beautiful. No, we're going backwards now. Uh-oh. Well, let's see. Hey, there we are. Beautiful. So Bounce, we're a family entertainment center in Milwaukee. We have inflatables, rock climbing, laser tag. We just did a massive expansion that included axe throwing. And we also have a restaurant and bar. So when people don't want to come in and play with all of the fun things we have there, we do offer delivery. And so when we founded Bounce in 2014, Ryan and I really wanted to do something different as a business. And it came down to our values, which are making connections with families, supporting employees in a completely different way than we had ever experienced before, having a significant impact both on Milwaukee and on Wisconsin, and then a global impact as well through environmental sustainability. So those four values have guided almost every decision that we have made. And as I'm talking here and as I was putting this together, we were thinking about how these things are all inextricably linked, that we can't just talk about the environmental aspect without talking about the employee impact and all those things. So I may have a lot of I won't go off on too many tangents, I promise. But all of these things are linked together. So what we did, we wanted to do something different from conventional delivery, because conventional delivery, you have employee-owned and insured and maintained vehicles, high emissions. They're often older vehicles in bad condition. And it's unsustainable for employees. You're talking about people who are working for $2.33 an hour, plus tips, hopefully. And drivers are responsible for their gas, their maintenance, their insurance, all of those things. And the issue then for employers becomes that you have no loyalty from employees because they can go anywhere else and have the same conditions or, you know, that grass is greener aspect. So there's a high turnover from your delivery employees. We wanted to turn that on its head. But we also had to go through a lot of these questions that I think a lot of businesses do. The initial cost of the vehicles, how do we as an employer then provide vehicles for our employees to be driving? How do we screen our drivers? How do we train them? Chargers, and of course the infamous range anxiety, which we get questions about literally every single day. And then the ongoing costs of electricity and maintenance and all those things. What we found was that our EV vehicles were actually quite affordable. We got two Nissan Leafs. They were about the same price as an ICE vehicle. And then when you look at the maintenance, the gas savings, all of those things, they are significantly less expensive. Our training costs are pretty minimal. The EVs and charging, all those things are, it's straightforward. It's nothing too far out of the box. Rather than going to a gas station and doing that, you're going to plug in the car when you come back. It's not that difficult. And just adjusting the way that our drivers were driving. Saying you're not going to do those hard stops and starts. If you're getting low, you'll need to come back and charge, which you're going to do anyway. And then we found public grants and private funds were readily available. And they were out there basically waiting to come to us for putting in infrastructure for our chargers, for our solar panels. We found that Tesla was happy to give us some money to install two Tesla chargers and a universal charger. So we have those on site for valet charging for our guests as well as for our vehicles. And then, of course, the maintenance costs, as we heard before, is significantly lower than conventional cars. Electricity from the grid is significantly cheaper than gas, even with the ridiculously low gas prices right now. And we decided that we really wanted this for that environmental sustainability aspect. And in order to build a great workforce, to have that system where we were investing in our employees by investing in the environment, we could marry those two issues together. We did improve our customer experience prior to getting our own fleet. We were using a third-party delivery service that was not reliable, and we had ongoing issues. This has been significantly better. Saved us a ton of money, to be honest. Economically, very efficient, again, the maintenance costs and everything. And then the one that I will very vainly admit, we wanted that early adopter street cred. We wanted to be able to say, we are a solar-powered electric vehicle delivery business. We underwrite for Milwaukee Public Radio, and that's in all of our commercials. And we have people who come in and they will say, oh, I heard about that. I heard about your electric vehicles. I heard about your solar chargers. And it has become one part of our social persona, I guess you'd say, that we are very outspoken on social justice issues, issues in the city. And the solar panel array and the EVs really just rounded out that portfolio for us. So we got a Focus on Energy grant to put in the photovoltaic system. Tesla funded our chargers and then the Nissan Leafs. And then again, we capitalized on the early adoption with underwriting, with our social media outreach, all of those aspects in order to elevate our brand to the consumers that are interested in that. And it's really great to be able to sort of pull in those guests that we most want to have. Our results, the environmental impact of having the solar array, we have much lower turnover than any other food delivery company in Milwaukee. The training costs are significantly lower because we're training our employees once. We're not having to retrain over and over again to replace those employees when they leave for that grass is greener. What I didn't mention earlier that I'll mention just very quickly, while other delivery drivers are making $2.33 an hour, we are a fair wage employer, so we're paying $8.50 per hour plus tips plus bonus. So all of our drivers, all of our employees are making that wage because we think it's unconscionable to pay people $2.33 an hour in 2019. We have no maintenance on the vehicles, better reviews on deliveries, and then the earned media. We've gotten a lot of press about the solar array, about the electric vehicles, and it's been fantastic. That's it.
Thank you, everyone. So we're just about at time. Our panelists just had so much knowledge to share. If you're looking for more information, I have some handouts at the back of the room. I believe my business cards are back there too, so feel free to give me a shout. We'll stay hang up here for a few minutes. Don't forget, afternoon plenary is in the ballroom at 2:30. Enter to win the raffle. Everyone gets a free ticket if you stop by the Renew table. And then at 3:30, we have our happy hour, and the boat will be outside just on this floor outside the doors. Sure, yeah. So any questions, you can come up to us or hit up Jason. Thank you all for joining us at the first EV session.